Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Sinai, the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 20, 2016, our end is 16th day of the 4th month, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Higher Ground. I'm pressing on the upward way, the heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as onward bound, to plant my feet on higher ground. Now lift me up and I shall stand, my faith on heaven's tableland. A higher plan than I have found, I'll plant my feet on higher ground. My heart has no desire to stay where doubts arise and fears dismay. Though some may dwell where these abound, my prayer, my aim is higher ground. Now lift me up and I shall stand, my faith on heaven's tableland. A higher plan than I have found, now plant my feet on higher ground. I want to live above the world, though Satan's doors set me ahead. For faith is called a joyful song, the song of saints on higher ground. Now lift me up and I shall stand, my faith on heaven's table land. A higher place than I have found, now plant my feet on higher ground. I want to scale the utmost height and catch a gleam of glory bright. But still I pray, for heaven I found, you'll lead me on to higher ground. You'll lift me up and I shall stand, my faith on heaven's tableland. A higher plane than I have found, you'll plant my feet on higher ground. The fate of Assyria and the triumph of the church. Timely greetings, volume 1, number 23, by V.T. Hollett. January 11, 1947, when this text of address was given. And we're going to turn to a prayer thought taken from Psalms 31. Let's read the whole chapter. It says, in thee, O Yahweh, do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in thy righteousness. Now, every day I pray for deliverance. For myself, for all of my families and all of the remnant around the world. All of our people, wherever they may be. So he says, deliver me in thy righteousness. It says, bow down thine ear to me, deliver me speedily. Be thou my strong rock for an house of defense to save me. For thou art my rock and my fortress, therefore for thy name's sake, lead me and guide me. Pull me out of the net that they have laid privately for me, for thou art my strength. Into thine hand I commit my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Yahweh Elohim, of the truth. I have hated them that regard lying vanities. but I trust in the Yahweh. I will be glad and rejoice in thy mercy, for thou hast considered my trouble. Thou hast known my soul in adversity, and hast not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. Thou hast set my feet in a large room. Have mercy upon me, O Yahweh, for I am in trouble. Mine eye is consumed with grief, yea, my soul and my belly. For my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of mine iniquity, and my bones are consumed. I was reproached among all mine enemies, but especially among my neighbors, and a fear to mine acquaintance. They that did see me without fled from me. I am forgotten as a dead man out of mind. I am like a broken vessel, for I have heard the slander of many. Fear was on every side while they took counsel together. Against me they devised to take away my life, but I trusted in thee, O Yahweh. I said, thou art my Elohim. My times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. Well, that's what happened down at Kermit 2002-2003. Yahweh delivered three of us out of the hand of our enemies and from them that persecuted us. Make thy face to shine upon thy servant. Save me for thy mercy's sake. Let me not be ashamed, O Yahweh, for I have called upon thee, and let the wicked be ashamed, and let them be silent in the grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak grievous things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. Oh, how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee before the sons of men. Thou shalt hide them in the secret of thy presence. From the pride of man thou shalt keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Yahweh, for he has showed me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. Now what's this strong city? Jerusalem. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless thou heardest the voice of my supplication when I cried unto thee. O love the Yahweh, all ye his saints, for the Yahweh preserveth the faithful and plentifully rewardeth the proud doer. Okay, so the proud doer, he gets rewarded according to Yahweh's reward for the evil person. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all ye that hope in the Yahweh. Okay, that ends our prayer thought. That is a very good chapter, Psalm 31, on deliverance. So pretty much it covers all bases there, what constitutes deliverance and what it takes to be delivered out of the snare of the devil. And those that hate you and persecute you, he will deliver you from them. That's what happened with us, and I praise Yahweh for it. He delivered us out of the hand of our enemy and from our persecutors. Banner at Kermit, 2003. That's the reason I feel so sad for Alan DeLong. He was one of the three that was delivered down there. And then he didn't want to stay out of the frying pan. He didn't want to stay out of the burning fire. He apparently, I don't know what it was that drew him back into it, but, well, yeah, I do know. But anyway, it's a sad commentary. Now we're going to go to our regular theme today. The fate of Assyria and the church of and the triumph of this Seventh-day Adventist church. Rabbi the Alpert church here, and he was talking about the Seventh-day Adventist church. So let's see what constitutes the triumph of the Seventh-day Adventist church. Okay. We'll go ahead into our main study. We'll forego the prayer thought for that study that he had. It says, Zephaniah chapter 3, and began with the first verse. Woe to her that is filthy and polluted, to the oppressing city. What city is that? That's the city of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, Jerusalem. The antecedent of the pronoun her is found in the 13th verse of the preceding chapter. In it is seen that the city here pointed out is Nineveh, the capital city of the ancient Assyria. Now, for the ascertaining whether this Nineveh is actually the capital city of the ancient Assyria or some other Assyria, we shall study the remaining verses of the chapter, Zephaniah 3:2. She obeyed not the voice, she received not correction, she trusted not in the Yeshua, she drew not near unto her Elohim. Now we know that the last feeding pastor, Gilead Center, replicated what Zephaniah chapter 3 verse 2 said. She obeyed not the voice. The voice of what? The voice of Yahweh and his son Yahshua. She received not correction. In other words, Yahshua, the true witness that came to the angel of Laodicea and says, buy me gold tried in the fire. Anoint thine eyes with eyeshadow, so that this shame of your nakedness do not appear. Well, that's what it meant, that she received not correction. And then that angel, that true witness of Yahshua, said to that angel again of Laodicea, said, repent and restore. Restore the sanctuary system back to its rightful order that you at one time had accomplished. Said, do it. Restore means that it had been built once before, so, and had gone in disrepair. So when restore means to put it back to its original, back to its original. I remember reading a story about Donald Trump and his real estate ventures there in New York City. The man that's running for President of the United States right now, he'd go find a famous old building that covered a whole city block four ways. I mean, one of the big hotels, famous hotels in New York that had run down over the years. And the movie stars quit coming to it. It was a five-star hotel. And they just abandoned it, more or less. And he would buy the building, and then he'd spend $50 million refurbishing it, and all of a sudden, it was restored back to even a better shape than it was when it was first built. That's what it means to restore. Okay. Now, it says, this verse, Zephaniah 3:2, points out the fact that the city and nation here mentioned had the privilege of hearing the voice of inspiration. Oh, that's what the voice was. I said earlier, I said it was the voice of Yahweh, which is, and the voice of his son Yahshua, but you know what? V.T. Hollis said she obeyed not the voice. And V.T. Hollis said that's the voice of inspiration. So inspiration has a voice. It can speak through anyone. Yahweh could use, he could use a she-ass, like he did with Balaam, and that ass he was riding. He could cause that animal to speak, and which he did. Said, This verse points out the fact that the city and nation here mentioned had the privilege of hearing the voice of inspiration, of knowing Elohim's truth, of knowing the Yahweh's truth, but has failed to take heed, received not correction, trusted not in the Yahshua, drew not near unto her Elohim. Didn't trust in his son, Yahshua, didn't draw near unto the Father. Wouldn't receive correction, wouldn't heed instruction. So it says in Zephaniah 3:3, her princes within are her are roaring lions. Her judges are even wolves. They know not the bones tell them all. Her princes being like roaring lions must be prideful persons who evidently think might makes right. Her judges are, as it were, even wolves. That is, they are in business not to execute judgment, justice, and righteousness, but to catch and tear, to fill their den with prey. Although they may have more than they know what to do with, they know not the bones tell them all. They got so much that they just wait till tomorrow to gnaw the bones. They don't have more than they can use for today. Zephaniah 3:4. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. Okay. Priest is a synonymous term also with minister or shepherds or pastors. They have done violence unto the law. Okay, so the law is very pointed out, very pointed. It points to the exactness of how you're to conduct your services. And so whenever these treacherous priests, pastors, shepherds, they decide to depart from the pattern and set up their own pattern because it's more convenient for them. It's easier for them to follow if they do it their way. In the language of the day, this verse would read, her teachers are light-hearted, not serious, and sober-minded. They are trifling. They are of no account. They are treacherous persons. Her ministers, rather than having kept the church clean, have polluted it and have done violence to the law. Declared it void. Oh my. So it's the ministers that are responsible. Rather than having kept the church clean by enforcing the law, okay, and judging fairly among the people when they have a problem. Thus far it is seen that the Assyria of this chapter represents a people who have been well instructed in the things of Yahweh, the law, and the sanctuary, but instead of obeying the Yahshua and ruling justly and righteously, they have greatly transgressed, have gone down into sin as deep as any people can possibly go. Now, what did I just read? Let's read that again. Thus far, it's saying that the Assyria of this chapter represents a people who have been well instructed in the things of Yahweh, comma, the law, and the sanctuary. Now, Gilead Center, the third feeding pasture for the Seventh-day Adventist, was the most instructed part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church from 1970 to 2003. They were more instructed in the law and the sanctuary, because Yahweh raised up a man and put the spirit of the truth in his heart and unfolded new truth and new light on the full restoration of his law and the sanctuary, and gave it to him in 1970. Brother Johnson gave him the creation calendar. And so he was the most instructed in the law and the sanctuary than Ellen G. White was, And a sanctuary message was given to Ellen G. White. The sanctuary systems, that's what the Adventist Church, that's what started their movement in 1844, was the theme of the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14. And so that was the theme of the all three feeding pastures, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. And Carmel represented Judah, Bashan represented the 10 tribes, Gilead represented all 12 tribes. Now, do you get that? This is the first time we've had this explained that way. Bashan represented the 10 tribes, represented by the 10 tribes of the north, 70 Adventists. Okay, the bear that had the three ribs in his mouth, that represented the Medo-Persia. They were the representative symbol of Bashan. Said the Adventist Church proper, having the headquarters in the north. The second one was Judah, Carmel, two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, represented by the shepherd rod, second feeding pasture. The third feeding pasture represented the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes. 10 tribes, 2 tribes, Judah. So, Brother Johnson was the most instructed in the law. Because he was the firstborn of the two brothers, antithetical brothers, Esau and Jacob. And so therefore he got the first privilege and opportunity to join these two sticks together of Ephraim and Judah. He was given the first opportunity to join the 12 tribes back together. So he was given all of the information for laying the foundation and raising up this building on this foundation. So he's the one that he was the most instructed in the things of the law and the sanctuary. But instead of obeying the Yahweh and ruling justly and righteously, they have greatly transgressed, have gone down into sin as deep as any people can possibly go. Zephaniah 3:5. The just, for the just Yeshua is in the midst thereof, that's the Son. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to the light. He faileth not, but the unjust knoweth no shame. In view of the fact that the Yahweh is in Yahshua, the Son, is in the midst of them, they must be well informed in the things of the Yahweh, well aware that in due season he makes known unto them his judgment. Well, I was reading this morning the book of Judges, chapter 14 and 15. And it says at the end of chapter 15, it says, Samson judged Israel for 20 years. Okay. So he says, he makes known unto them his judgment. In view of all these, the only possible conclusion one can come to is that Yahweh's church must be in their midst. Zephaniah 3:6-8. I have cut off the nation. Their towers are desolate. I made their streets waste, that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. I said, surely thou wilt fear me. Thou wilt receive instruction, so their dwelling should not be cut off. However, I punished them, but they rose early and corrected all their doing. Therefore, wait ye upon me, saith Yahweh, until the day that I rise up unto the prey. For my determination is to gather the nation, that I may assemble the kingdom, to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. Now this is exactly what's going on right now in the world, and I'm going to reread this again. Zephaniah 3:6-8. I have cut off the nations. Just reading the news this morning. The British exit from the Euro Union. And the United States and the great nations of the world are all shook up. The International Monetary Fund, the Federal Reserve System that prints our money for us. They said, oh my goodness, if Britain pulls out of the Euro Union, we got manufacturers over there in Britain. We've got a million. The United States government employs, I mean the British, and the United States government employs 1 million Britons to work in those manufacturers. So Donald Trump keeps saying, I'm bringing those manufacturers back to the United States and we're going to employ our people, not their people anymore. So what is Yahweh doing? He's closing up those manufacturing plants now in Britain. When Britain pulls out, they're going to take over those manufacturing plants of the United States. And they pull out of the Euro Union. They're going to take them away from the United States. They're going to keep them manufacturing, but they're going to be belong to them. And that's going to make, that's going to create a very wedge between the United States and Great Britain. And lobby even create a war. Okay? So let's go ahead. Said, I have cut off the nations. Their towers are desolate. I made their streets ways that none passes by. Okay? Their cities are destroyed so that there is no man. That there is none inhabitant. Now, hold on to that right there while I go and turn Isaiah 24. And read some similar language here in Isaiah 24. Have very similar language. It says, behold, the Yahweh maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof. Alright? So now what I just read, Isaiah 24:1, and then I've just read to you, I made their streets waste, that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed, and that so that there is no man, that there is none inhabiting. Okay, so it says, and Isaiah once again 24:1, behold, the Yahweh maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turns it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof. Okay, and it shall be. As with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury to him. The land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the for the Yahweh has spoken this word. The earth mourneth and fadeth away. The world languishes and fadeth away. The hardy people of the earth do languish. The earth also is defiled under the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, changed the ordinance, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are desolate. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men left. Okay, now let's go back again now to Zephaniah 3:6-8. So I said, surely thou wilt fear me, thou wilt receive instruction. Now who's he talking to here? He's talking to his church, Gilead Center. And he's talking to the angel of the candlestick, the Lord of Sons. And he said, I said, surely thou wilt fear me, thou wilt receive instruction. Go read Revelation 3:14-17. That was the instruction that the true witness was given to this angel. And that's what's recorded right here in Zephaniah 3:6-8. It's talking about the same thing. So their dwelling should not be cut off. He said, I said, surely thou wilt fear me. Thou wilt receive instruction, Verlis. So that their dwelling at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 2002, it should not be cut off. If that angel let us here would receive instruction, Then Gilead Center will not be cut off. However, I punish them. that they rose early and corrupted all their doing. Okay. Therefore wait ye upon me, saith the Yahshua, until the day that I rise up to the prey. So Gilead sinner waited until 2002, because she had completely corrupted her ways. I know, I was there, part of it, I witnessed it all. So he said, therefore wait you upon me, this is Yahshua talking, saith Yahshua, until the day that I rise up to the prey. Well, what is the prey? The prey was Gilead sinner, and the angel of Laodicea had become the prey of this Yahshua that rose up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nation. Well, he was going to use Rhoda Johnson to be the leader in gathering the nations. That's when he gave him the full sanctuary system restored so he could purify the church and bring forth the first fruit, the 144,000, that he would use to gather the nations with. That's the reason why he said, my determination is to gather the nation. Even though this here Brother Johnson that became a prey to Yahshua tried to stand in his way, tried to be a stumbling block to that. So he says, but for my determination is to gather the nation, that I may assemble the kingdoms. Assemble the kingdoms. What do you mean to assemble them? To bring in these righteous people from all these different kingdoms and establish them as a purified kingdom of their own, wherever they may live in the world. To pour upon them mine indignation. To pour upon them mine indignation. So he's going to gather the kingdom. To pour upon them his indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. All the earth. When it says all the earth, it's talking about what it says in Isaiah 26:9. Just turn the page here. It says, with my soul have I desired thee in the night, with my spirit within me will I seek thee early, for when thy judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. So the whole world represents all the earth. When it says all the earth in prophecy is the United States proper, but when you say all the earth, you're talking about the whole world. All right. For the Yahshua himself warns that he has cut off nations, that he has made their towers desolate and their streets waste, that he has destroyed their cities and has left no inhabitants in them. He points out that all this he did as an object lesson for their future good, so that they as a nation might fear him and receive instruction. So he's raised up now this antithetical David, Elijah David, to publish these instructions. What are the instructions? Hear ye the rod and hear ye the pointer. Remember ye the law of Moses. Malachi 4 then becomes our number one theme today. That I appointed unto him in Horeb. Remember ye the law of Moses in the latter days. That their dwellings be not be cut off. But in spite of these examples, they rise early and corrupt all their doings. So it is that at long last, Yahshua rises to the prey. So he starts the judgment of the living. He closes the judgment of the dead. He deals with the angel of Laodicea, and he spews him out of his mouth, and he changes the guard to a new guard. Together the nations assemble the kingdoms, and Assyria gets her punishment. So who is this spiritual Assyria then? It is the Ishmaelites, those that are born of the flesh, firstborn of the flesh, that will not let go of the leadership and give it over. So they have to be fully punished and taken out of the way. Okay, and that's... So you start with Cain and Abel. You start with Cain the firstborn. He was a devil. Okay, you had the two brothers, Cain and Abel. He killed his brother, so Yahweh had to get rid of Cain and raise up a third son that became the progenitor. And then come down to Noah, he had three sons. He had Shem, Ham, and Japheth. He had to get rid of Ham because he was a devil. He was a descendant of Cain's seed. And then you had Abraham comes along, and he had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael was a devil. Had to get rid of him. Isaac, the second born by the firstborn of the Spirit, was the one that carried on the righteous line. And then Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. Esau was a devil. Had to get rid of him. It says so there in Romans 9, Esau was a devil. Okay, so now he had to get rid of him, continue on with Jacob, the firstborn of the Spirit, but the secondborn of Isaac. And then he come down to the cross, you had Yahshua. You had two people portrayed there. And you had Yahshua and Judas Iscariot, vying for the leadership. And Judas was a devil. Son of perdition, representing Satan. So essentially, between Yahshua and Satan, there's two people there, the good and the bad. Then you come down to our day, and you come down to 1844. You have this these two people, two people, antitypical Esau and Jacob, again developed. There's two people there. But before that, you had the antitypical Ishmael and Isaac developed. And that was Ben Roden. Ben Roden and Rhoda Johnson represented Ishmael and Isaac, 1955, until Rhoda Johnson was through in 2003. Those two played that role of Ishmael and Isaac. And so how many times down through the ages since the Garden of Eden have we had these team of two people that's vying for the leadership? Okay, let's start with number one. Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel. Okay. Then number two, you had Noah with Noah with Shem and Ham. And then number three, you had Abraham with Ishmael and Isaac. And then number four, you had Yahshua. And you had Judas Iscariot. Okay. And number five, you had antitypical Ishmael, Ben Roden, and Verlus as Ishmael and Isaac. And then number six, you had Rhoda W. Johnson. You had Rhoda W. Johnson as Esau and Jacob. Let's back up and review that again. I missed one of them. And number one is Cain and Abel. Number two was Noah with Shem and Ham. Number three was Abraham with Ishmael and Isaac. Number four was with Isaac that had Esau and Jacob. Number five was Ben Roden. Let's see, with Ben Roden and Rhoda Johnson as Ishmael and Isaac, antitypical. No, number five was Yeshua and Judas. Number six was Ben Roden and representing Ishmael and Isaac. And number seven was Rhoda Johnson representing Esau and Elijah David representing Jacob. That was number seven. And so number eight, the new order, here we come back full circle again. Now this time, it is two good ones that are running, and that is Yeshua. Yeshua and David. And that is number eight. And that's your new order. So now, what has happened here? It started off with Cain and Abel, and it ended up with Yeshua and David being the two that's playing the prominent role again here in the 12th hour. So think about that. That's some new breaking revelation there. I didn't know when I was going to bring that in, but it seemed to fit in pretty good right there. So now the question is that he said, Yeshua says, so it is that at long last Yeshua rises to the prey, gathers the nations, assembles the kingdom, and Assyria gets her punishment. From this we see that Assyria, under the discussion, exists in the time of the end, the time in which the great and dreadful day of Yeshua takes place. Okay, so the time of the end would be then when the 12th hour shows up, and that showed up in 2002. So we've been talking then about this Assyrian yoke that was around the church's neck, and that Assyrian yoke happened to be controlled by the angel of Laodicea, the seventh candlestick, here at Gilead Center. So it's, we have identified the spiritual Assyria today that had to be broken. This Assyria, therefore, is an antitype of the ancient Assyria, just as the Babylon of Revelation 17 and 18 is an antitype of the ancient Babylon. Assyria, charges inspiration, is a rejoicing city that dwells carelessly, that's say in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me, Zephaniah 2:15. At this point, let us pause a moment and summarize the characteristics by which this modern Assyria is to be identified. Number one, as man looks at things, she is so great that there is none like her. She is well instructed in the things of Yahweh. So, Gilead Center was well instructed in the things of Yahweh. Of all the branches of the Adventist Church, the third feeding pastor, Gilead, was 100% instructed in the things of Yahweh. Restoration of the sanctuary, raising up the foundation of many generations, raising up the tabernacle of David that had fallen down, Amos chapter 9. Okay, so she was well instructed. This Assyria was well instructed in the things of Yahweh. Number two, she is oppressive, a hard ruling nation. Number three, she has polluted the sanctuary. And has declared the law of Yahweh void. Number four, and that's what happened with Gilead Center. She has piled up wealth by going after it as an evening wolf goes after its prey. Well, Gilead Center didn't pile up any wealth. But Gilead Center said that as soon as we stand with the Zion with the Lamb, all nations are going to come and flow unto us, and they're going to bring their gold and silver. So this is how she was expecting to gather up all the wealth of the world. Okay. Number five, she harbors the church of the Yahweh. Well, the Gilead Center was the place where Yahweh chose to place his name, that third feeding pasture. The other two had already dried up. They were over with. Their time period was up. Number six, she exists in the time that the Yeshua is to manifest his power and destroy all the wicked nations. Well, this is Yahshua that manifested his power at Gilead Center 2002 when he came down, took the reins in his own hands, and changed the guard. And vanquished the old guard, and all those that followed stayed with him, and raised up the new guard, which was antithetical Elijah, David. Number seven, she is an Assyria-like nation. Widespread, a nation of conquest. There is but one people under the sun that answers to all these descriptions, and that people is the English-speaking people, in whose midst is the church. Now notice it said an English-speaking people. Okay. Midst is the church. In whose midst is the church. And from whose midst the gospel and the Bible flow out to all nations. So Brother Johnson taught the sanctuary. He taught that River Ezekiel 47, that water starting at the altar of the sanctuary. And it starts first in the sanctuary, and it gathers 144,000, and then it trickles out underneath the threshold of the house, and it goes out then to the Gentile world. So this is exactly identifies Gilead Center and her teaching. As clear as language can make it, the burden of the prophet of Zephaniah is for the English-speaking Christians at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, 2002. And he called it the Christian world. And no doubt, Gilead Center represented a part of the Christian world. Matter of fact, with the Most High presiding over the Christian world. Now, the Christian world retains that title as long as it is co-mingled with the wheat and the tares, as long as it's co-mingled with the righteous and the wicked are worshiping together, then they retain that title, Christian. But once they become purified, it's no longer Christian. The title is saints, pure and simple. It is the saints of Yahweh. They're no longer called Christian. Yahweh is now saying unto Syria, capital city, indeed, you are doing all these abominations. But you will not thus continue long, for the time is at hand. Put a stop to your absurdities. Okay? So Yahweh is now saying to Assyria's capital city, Gilead Center, because the overall Assyrian today would be the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And Brother Johnson represents the capital of Assyria, Gilead Center, Nineveh. So Nineveh is identified as Gilead Center and not the Seventh-day Adventist Church proper. Okay? Indeed, you are doing all these abominations, and he was. When my wife and I discovered this book, Fossilized Custom, and we got to read it, we realized, my goodness, our church is practicing all these abominations that's found here in this book of abomination. Man, birthday celebrations are number one. And we're the first and foremost in celebrating everybody's birthday on holy days in the Gilead Center. So, doing all these abominations. And all the time I thought that we were separate from the world. I thought we were people called out that wouldn't be guilty or found guilty of practicing these abominations that we was accusing the Adventist Church of practicing. How many times we point our finger at the Adventist Church? Oh, well, they wear earrings. They wear makeup. Why? They don't keep the Sabbath. They go out and eat on the Sabbath day. Why? They're going back to, 50% of them going back to eating pork. Well, they're just doing everything that the world is doing. They're going to all these amusements, man. They watch it on the television on the Sabbath, and they're doing all these things. We don't do those things. Oh, yeah? Indeed, you are doing all these abominations, but you will not thus continue long. The time is at hand. So 2002, the time was at hand. Put a stop to your absurdities, it says. Zephaniah 3:9. For then will I turn unto the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Yahshua, and to serve him with one consent. Inspiration for Certainty declares that after Assyria receives her punishment, that's the whole Adventist church, that's Ezekiel 9, that's the whole Adventist church collectively, her, all three of her feeding pastors, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead, the Rod, the Davidians, and the Branch Davidians, which was the Advent, which was Gilead Center. And after the wicked are taken out of his church, then will the gospel be proclaimed in a pure language. In pure gospel truth, that whosoever will say, may call upon the name of Yahshua to serve him with the heart and soul, then it is that only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will have a right to proclaim the third angel's message when it has united with the fourth and fifth angel to swell into a loud cry, starting with the Adventist church, harvesting 144,000, and then her Gentile brethren that dwells in the isles and the nations of the sea. Review and Herald, November the 19th, 1908. I added the last part to that. Zephaniah 3:10-11. From beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my suppliants, even the daughter of my dispersed, shall bring mine offering. In that day shalt thou not be ashamed for all thy doings wherein thou hast trespassed against me. For then will I take away out of the midst of thee them that rejoice in thy pride. And thou shalt no more be haughty because of my holy mountain. So what is this holy mountain? It is that little stone hewn out of that big mountain that was planed off. The big mountain is the Adventist Church. The little stone is Mount Zion at the 12th hour in its infancy. But it's called a holy mountain because it comes through the first judgment and survived Ezekiel 9 threshing. Okay. When the gospel is proclaimed in a pure language, then even from the ends of the earth, people, Yahweh's people will come with an offering unto the Yahshua. Having removed all who rejoice in her pride, the church shall be haughty no more. Zephaniah 3:12, I will also leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people, and they shall trust in the name of the Yahshua. For the fact that he leaves in their midst poor and afflicted people is sufficient evidence in itself that the purification of the church takes place before the millennium, before Isaiah 33:24 is fulfilled, and before he sets up the kingdom mentioned therein. Now, did you get that? It says, for the fact that he leaves in their midst poor and afflicted people is sufficient evidence in itself. That's the purification of the Seventh-day Adventist Church at Gilead Center. Now, 2002 took place and takes place before the millennium, before Isaiah 33:24 is fulfilled, and before he sets up the kingdom mentioned therein. Let's go read Isaiah 33:24. Isaiah 33:24, and the inhabitants shall not say, I am sick, for the people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. Okay, it says that Zephaniah 3:13, the remnant of Israel shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. The remnant, those that are left after purification takes place, shall sin no more. They shall forever thereafter stand without gall in their mouth. Zephaniah 3:14. Sing, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. A great day is coming for the righteous, a dreadful one for the wicked. We therefore, as children of Zion, are encouraged to sing and shout for joy, because we have finally come unto the time of the Elohim's great deliverance. Again, here we are dealing with that word deliverance. Zephaniah 3:15. For the Yahshua hath taken away thy judgment, he hath cast out thine enemy, the king of Israel, even the Yahshua is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not see evil any more. Surely these revelations of the prophecy should encourage every believer to shout with joy as he realizes that the day in which he shall no more see evil is right at hand, that the Yahshua is to be his only king. Okay. Well, Vicki Hardiff wasn't quite up with the latest prophecies on this antitypical Elijah, David, because now we have a new definition for Elijah in the Bible. The antitypical Elijah in Malachi 4 is a king. He is a parliamentary ruler. He's a monarch. Okay? And so this antitypical David represents the description of this monarch that rules as a visible king. And as I've shown you earlier about these, Yahweh's always raised up a double leadership. Two people, one to vie, to vie for the leadership. And so there you have it. Zephaniah 3:16-20. And that day it shall be said unto Jerusalem, fear thou not, and to Zion, let not thine hands be slack. The Yahshua thy Savior in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save, he will rejoice over thee with joy, he will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. I will gather them that are sorrowful for the solemn assembly. Who are they unto whom the reproach fit with a burden? Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict thee, and I will save her that halted, and gather her that was driven out, and I will give them praise and fame in every land, for they have been put to shame. At that time will I bring you again, even in the time that I gather you, for I will make you a name and a praise among all people of the earth, when I turn back your captivity before your eyes, saith Yahshua. Yahshua wants us to know that when he turns away our captivity, he will also make us a name and a praise among all the people of the earth, for this kingdom of the Judah, the Mount Zion, the 12th hour, the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven set up here on earth, the purified and set apart. So Yahweh brings the kingdom of heaven down here on earth. He sets it up with this earthly kingdom, the kingdom of David. It is therefore not only premillennial, but also probationary. And how glad we ought to be for the privilege of to be among the first of the first fruits. House of David, first of the first fruit. Wave sheaf offering. Represented by the barley, folks. We're represented by the barley. The 144,000 represented by the wheat. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with a song. Lead me to the rock that is high and high, Elijah David. And lead me to the rock that is high and high, I'll forever be indebted to the sun, the very moon. To live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I had to attain, if ever count alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than that. Lead me to the place where the Savior's feet, lead me to the mountains in the sky. scarcely a stranger could be seen passing by. For the moon shone bright with the heavenly lights of all the starry host. For the brightest star of them all is the one that marred the moon. Lead me to the rock that is higher than night. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the fences of the sky. For the star pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger's crypt. For he that descended out of the one created from the Adam's rib. As the time rolled on, many stories were told about the man of the Galilee. How he changed the water into the wine and made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's hard and not. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mansion of the sky. For this is the man for all time, for whom men come to rely. For the witness of many miracles right before their eyes. For he lived and he died and he rose again with the victory over the grave. With the proof and once and for all that he had the power to save. Don't leave me in the desert barren and dry. Vanquished forever and left to die. Brother, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mountain in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mansions in the sky.